Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Elizabeth Minkili knows a thing or two about Italian cooking. Over the past 30 years, she's written for more than 40 magazines and authored 8 cookbooks about Italian food and culture in her home in Italy. In her new cookbook, The Italian Table, Creating Festive Meals for Family and Friends, she combines menus as well as insight into the traditions of the food and celebrations to give home cooks and hosts a step-by-step guidance on how to recreate fabulous meals at their own tables. The Italian Table is published by Rizzoli and Elizabeth Minkili. Welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me.
One of my favorite quotes from you is you say, Italians take food very seriously, but they don't take it seriously at all. What do you mean by this?
Well, that's, you know, when people ask me to sum up about what this book is about, you know, Italians wake up in the morning thinking about food. They're, you know, already planning dinner for like next week. Yet at the same time, it's just part of life. It's like breathing. And it's that, you know, sort of contradiction that I tried to capture in this book where, you know, it's something you need to live. It's something that's absolutely important, but it's just there. And it's style, it's setting, it's culture, it's everything.
I have friends, Julia and Massimiliano, and when we go to their house, it's just always beautiful and effortless, and it just happens.
And I think people, when you have a regular sort of Italian cookbook that's full of great recipes and that you can really successfully recreate the food, there's that other dimension that's always missing. And that's the questions I get from people, either, you know, on social media or in person, you know, how do Italians actually eat? You know, there's lots of pasta and pizza and gelato, but how is that happening? How does that work into their daily life? And that's what I tried to capture in the book.
What first brought you to Italy?
Well, I've actually been living there on and off since I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I was 12, my parents went to Italy and they just fell in love with it, picked us up, moved us from St. Louis, Missouri, and we lived in Italy for 2 years, we lived in Rome. And, you know, once I got over the total, you know, trauma of a 12-year-old being uplifted, I loved it, and spent vacations there over my lifetime. But actually moved back while I was in graduate school working on 16th century garden architecture. And but then when I luckily was reconsidering academia, I met my husband, who happened to be Italian and happened to live in Rome, and then my life changed and I moved there full time.
Well, that answers my question: was what made you stay? Well, love and food,
love and food, and love of food.
Italian food is obviously hugely popular here in the U.S., but to your point, how do Italians actually eat as compared to how we Americans think Italians eat?
Well, there's no one answer to that, you know, because there's as many answers as you can think of. But the thing is, I think most people are confused because it seems to be one big carb fest, you know, or we're constantly drinking wine. And yes, to all those things, we are constantly doing that, except at certain times of the day, certain occasions. And so, you know, it could be that you're having pizza, but it's between classes. You're a university student and you have one slice of pizza. And that's a very specific way of eating pizza in Rome. Or you might be eating at the beach. So how do you actually sit down and have a meal while still fitting into your bikini? And maybe you're invited over to a princess's house, to her castle for lunch, and that happens. And what does she serve then? And so I just randomly picked 12 of my greatest hits of meals that I'd actually been to and decided to sort of outline them to just to show people these are ways people are eating in Italy today.
So this is your
ninth
cookbook. All right. So when you get to cookbook number 9, you have to figure out like what to keep and what to edit out.
Well, it was extremely hard picking 12 meals.
Yeah,
you know, the outline had 24, just saying. And one of the reasons we narrowed it down to 12 had to do with the fact that once I started photographing the book and I did all the photography myself, my editors decided, okay, this is more than a little handbook for how to throw an Italian dinner party. This is a big, beautiful, you know, almost not a coffee table book, but something big and luscious. And so that meant more pictures, that meant less words, less meals. And so I really had to narrow it down. And I tried to decide to keep it as geographically diverse as possible.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And also times of the day, times of the year. That said, it's randomly my favorites. And, you know, we go from Puglia, which is in the heel of Italy, up to Venice, you know, on a boat. We, you know, it's all over the place. And I get as fancy as eating with a princess or eating on a farm. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a nonna rolling out ravioli. I try to include a lot of those things.
So if someone is picking up your book and thinking, I'm going to try this dinner party thing, this thing they call a dinner party, where would you have them start?
I might be a little bit prejudiced, but maybe with the menu that's at my own house.
Okay.
Just because I included that because it's something that I've been cooking that same menu for years and years. It's something that people love. It's very easy to do. And it's a summer, it's an end of summer meal. So it sort of bridges the seasons. You can usually get all the ingredients. And the one thing that it has is it's super easy. I start with actually fried sage leaves, which sounds complicated, but aren't, and so very impressive for your guests.
It sounds like it smells amazing.
It smells amazing. Bean soup, chicken, vegetables, a really simple jam tart at the end. And it's all very easy to throw together. And just in case you're worried about throwing it together, for every menu, I include a game plan. So I got you covered.
So important. So important to have a game, especially with a dinner party, so that you as the host can also have a good time.
Well, you know, my philosophy is that you shouldn't serve your guests anxiety. And you, 20 minutes before your guests arrive, I want you on the couch having a Negroni. You know, that's the way to do it.
My guest is Elizabeth Minkili. Her latest cookbook is The Italian Table, Creating Festive Meals for Family and for Friends. So you mentioned a Negroni. Can we get you to weigh in on the Aperol Spritz?
Absolutely.
Have you heard about this controversy?
Yes, I just wrote about it on my blog today.
Oh, you did? Okay, good. We caught you on a good day.
I did.
Where do you weigh in on the Aperol Spritz?
Well, first of all, I don't believe anybody should attack a cocktail. I am an equal opportunity drinker. I think if you like that cocktail, good for you. Also, you know, any cocktail made with bad ingredients, and that was the gist of the article. If you make a bad Aperol Spritz, it's going to treat you badly. But if you make a great Aperol Spritz, it's great. And if you don't personally like it, fine. I can suggest 10 other cocktails for you. But it seems a little bit, it's like saying don't drink bad beer or don't have a rum and coke. I mean, we all know what rum and cokes taste like, and it's not for everybody, and it's probably hiding bad rum, but there's a time and a place for rum and coke. And I'm all for Aperol Spritz. There's a recipe for Aperol Spritz in my cookbook, but I also include variations.
Yeah, page 14.
You can have it with Campari if you'd like. Mm-hmm. I like it with Chinard. If you like Aperol and it's beautiful and it tastes great, I think you should go for it. There's nothing wrong with the Aperol Spritz. So I think it was a bit clickbait, that article. I mean, that's what people are saying. I know the woman who wrote the article and the person who's interviewed. Obviously, we all know each other. And she just wrote a fantastic book on aperitifs from France. And I just think it was a little bit misinterpreted. But that said, no reason to hate on Aperol Spritzes.
I'm going to let you pronounce this. You have these great sort of like small bites that you can pair with things. I'm going to say fried meatballs. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say fried meatballs. These are cicchetti, and cicchetti are a form of eating in Venice. And they often are called the Italian tapas. Hmm. And what they are is basically, like tapas, a way to absorb alcohol that you might be drinking.
We've got a theme going.
But the main, I know that you're going to think I'm a lush, but anyway, the main point of cicchetti is social. And that's what people forget. And so, you know, you're not going out to have a lot of wine and these just happen to absorb the alcohol. What you're going out is to meet your friends and you happen to have wine. And then to pass the time until dinner or until lunch, you have a few, let's say, fried meatballs or beautiful crostini with prosciutto and melon and ricotta, or this one recipe in my book which has marinated lemon and onion, and it's just fantastic. And so the food is part of it, the drinking's part of it, but the main part of it is meeting your friends. And I give you the advice of how to turn this tradition into a festa in your own home.
So we have your recipe for I'm going to try out my one semester Italian on this one. Torta di spinaci.
Very almost good. Spinaci. Yes.
I threw another
you did,
consonant in there.
That's okay.
Torta di spinaci.
Yeah. And that was a really wonderful dish I learned from the nonna, the one nonna sort of that I included in this book. And it is basically a spinach flan. I used spinach when I was at her house. We went out and collected wild nettles. Mm-hmm. You could use borage. You could use Swiss chard. Whatever green you have, mixture of greens. It's infinitely adaptable. You can serve it as an antipasto first. You can serve it as a side dish. And if you have, vegetarians coming over, it makes a beautiful dish.
Yeah.
And so it's one of these things that I would never find in a recipe because it's just too simple. But yet I was there at the time, at the meal, and I was able to get that recipe from her.
And it is on our website, as well as in the cookbook, The Italian Table, Creating Festive Meals for Family and Friends. My guest is Elizabeth Minchilli. So you mentioned this earlier about pizza in Rome is a very specific thing. What is that specific thing?
Well, you know, flatbread with sauce on it is eaten all over the Mediterranean. And mm-hmm. so pizza is just a form of that. And in Rome, there's several kinds of pizza. You get the round pizza where you sit down and, you know, controversial to use a knife and fork or not, all that. We won't get into that now. But then there's pizza taglio. And pizza taglio means cut pizza, basically pan pizza. And the size of the pan pizza and the quantity of them on offer is only determined by the size of the shop. And the shops are a certain width. And so you walk in at the back of the shop, there's a counter. It might have six, might have eight different kinds of pizza. You go in, you pick your kinds of pizza, and then you say the weight, how much you want. And that's a really interesting thing because Italians are always conscious of portion sizes, by weight even. You know, most people know, oh yeah, you know, I have 100 grams of pasta, or, you know, mm-hmm. I want 100 grams of pizza. And they know that's going to be enough. And they don't ask for extra toppings or this or that. You kind of have this built into you. And so it's something you get. They heat it up quickly or you have it room temperature. You take your little tray with a little piece of like wax paper that acts as sort of like a napkin. And you eat it, you enjoy it while standing at a counter, maybe a stool, and then you're on your way. So you really go to the best place, the best ingredients, but it's not overly fussy. And again, I turn this in a way of a super easy way to entertain because a lot of the pizzas, the dough can actually be baked off ahead of time.
Yeah, that was my next question. So you take this idea of this Roman pizza that you just described so beautifully and bringing it to this party atmosphere, this way to do it in your home, and this 24-hour pizza dough.
Yeah, that makes it super simple. People are scared at that at first because they're like, oh my God, you need it. You put it in the fridge, mm-hmm. you take it out, you punch it. It seems really complicated. And it is sort of the first time, which is why I give you specific instructions how to do it. And then, you know, you have your pizza dough ready and you can bake off some of the bases because some of the pizza doughs I have you bake and it's almost like a salad on top. And only a few of them I have you actually bake at the very last minute because people often think, oh, pizza's too hard to make for company because you're in the kitchen turning out these pizzas. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. And then people can try, like, you know, seven different kinds of pizza, which is always fun.
So you've got your timing here. The day before you make the dough, 9 hours before remove the dough, fold it, 4 hours before take the dough out. You talk about all this. And then to the left, you have what to drink. But I do not see wine.
No, pizza. Italians rarely drink wine with pizza. I mean, you can, but it's more likely you drink beer. And, you know, if you go into a pizza place in Trastevere, you know, where Italians are going, you're sure to see a 1 liter bottle of Coke or Pepsi or, mm-hmm. or Fanta or some of those other things on the table. And that's what they're drinking, a sort of a special treat. And Italians don't drink a lot of soft drinks. They're not drinking them all the time. So it's sort of a special treat and something sweet. Actually, in fizzy goes with the pizza and that or water and or beer, but rarely ever wine.
Elizabeth, what is in your book that you think would really surprise someone, especially an American, about one of the menus you've created?
Well, I think it's one of the things that surprised me the most about one of these menus. And as I said, I traveled. I didn't ask these people to prepare specific things. I took what they gave me and it worked or it didn't work. And one of the most spectacularly successful photo shoots that I had was just at a farm in Puglia. And I was there with my family over the course of 4 days, and I finally said to the woman, hey, can I photograph this meal? She said, sure. And so she did it, and I photographed it, and it was just, you know, the sun, the plates, the dishes. It was all wonderful. I got the recipes. I went home. I wrote the chapter. I rewrote the chapter. And then I read it for, like, the 10th time, and I realized every single of the 6 recipes had the same 5 ingredients. And I thought, oh, my God, like, there's no way I can include this as a chapter in a cookbook. People are going to think I'm lazy. People are going to think I made this up. And then I realized, no, this is most revelatory about this way of eating. She had those 5 ingredients. It was the height of summer. We had zucchini, melanzane, eggplant, mm-hmm. Tomatoes. We had a little bit of fish, had a little bit of cheese, and different ways. And you have 5 completely different courses. And to me, that was sort of a aha moment that surprised even me.
I love it. And this is the last one in your book. Yes,
it is.
The crowning achievement. Something I want to ask you about is that you give tours, right?
I do.
And Italy, explain this to me. This sounds like it might be a vacation in my future.
I come to Italy. I do culinary tours, and I've been doing them for about 10 years now. And they first started out as day tours in Rome around the market. markets, and we still do that. And we, meaning me and my daughter, Sophie. And I expanded about 5 years ago because I wanted to go deeper. And I wanted people to really experience what it was like. I mean, it's in 5 days, you can't really live in Italy, but you kind of can. Mm-hmm. And you can get into the rhythms. And so I created a week-long tours in Rome, and then also Umbria, and also in Puglia. And every day, and I take care of all the housing and everything. And every day we focus on a different aspect of food, whether it's olive oil or cheese, or we go to, you know, a goat farm, or we go to see pottery being made. But always in cultural context. So yeah, it's a lot of eating and it's a lot of food. We also drink and we go to wineries. But it's also always in context. And that means either, you know, yes, we'll go to the Duomo, the church in Orvieto. But we also get to meet the person who's milking the goat, which to me is just as important as who did the frescoes in the church. And also somehow relates to food. I mean, everything in Italy relates to food. And so these are deep dives into Italy. And we're now planning a trip to Sicily as well. And they're really fun. I mean, my daughter and I enjoy these. And we're doing one in Umbria next week. I just finished one in Rome with Melissa Clark, you know, who writes the New York Times.
Yeah, sure.
And so I sometimes pair with people, sometimes do them on my own. I'm doing one with Elizabeth Gilbert in July.
Oh, forget praying and love.
Eating, it's a lot of eating. Creativity is about eating too. And so they're really fun, and you can find out about it on my website.
It sounds like it's a blast.
It is. It's really fun. You should come.
I think I will. I went to Italy one time, and a friend suggested I hire a local guide, and he took us to all kinds of different places that made olive oil. And that was the afternoon, and it was so much fun.
Yeah, can you believe I can make a week out of that?
I can, actually. The name of the book is The Italian Table, Creating Festive Meals for Family and Friends. Elizabeth Minchilli, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
This is All of It on WNYC.